connecting you to people, knowledge, and business development in the line striping industry. This is Stripe It Like It's Hot. Brought to you by Blacktop Banter with your host, Cam Roberts.
What's happening, Pod Squad? Welcome into another episode of Stripe It Like It's Hot. And I have a fantastic dude, virtually, Jack Child. How are you today, Jack?
Well, thank you, Cam. You and I have been playing tag on this for a while, so we finally got to together on it.
I think that's a good thing. I think that means that we're both out there doing stuff.
Right.
So it'll be, contrary to what you tell me like over and over again, it will be worth the wait because you have such a cool company, man, and just a cool brand. And I actually, you know, I've seen you in the flesh now just twice, and they were so brief. Like, I need to just...
Very exciting, I imagine. Most people are in awe, right? Well, or they go, awe.
It's one or the other. So you are the... Well, I'm not going to introduce you. You introduce yourself. Who's Jack Child?
Jack Child, G-Force Parking Lot Striping. We put U.S. military veterans in the parking lot striping business.
Yeah, that's how it started. But there's more brands happening now than just striping. Like, what else is going on under the Veteran Services umbrella?
Right. So, got 47 locations now with GeForce. We're coast to coast. Still got a few gaps out there that we need to fill. We're looking around, and you know, we award rather large territories, so we're kind of running out of territory to sell, so to speak. And like, what are we going to do next? And one of our guys has been in concrete all his life, and I've got a few antique cars, and I always wanted an epoxy floor in my garage. My partner's a car guy, and he has his floor epoxied. And so one thing led to another, and we decided to launch a second brand, and we decided to keep it along the, you know, along the aviation theme. We call it Mach 1, epoxy floors. We started that in 2021, and we brought on a husband and wife team, Army veteran from Fresno, California, Jason and Bella Andrews, to partner with us on Mach 1. Jason been in the business about 10 years or so, so he's full of that technical knowledge that you need. That's a tricky process to get right. It's frankly, I think initially it's harder than parking lot scraping. Once you get the hang of it, I think probably scraping and striping at a high level is then again the harder of the two. But anyway, so I think we're at 14 locations on Mach 1. And it wasn't by design, just sort of coincidentally. Our first franchisee's brother-in-law is in the painting business. He's an Army veteran. And he had been, you know, kind of following what I was doing through by way of his brother-in-law, who, like I said, he was our first franchisee. So he saw how things were going, and he approached me about franchising the painting business. So it's a lot to take on, you know, more than one new brand in a year. So we did that. We had to rebrand because his name could not be trademarked. We were looking at brand names, and it's kind of hard to find a brand name that fits our logo. Our logo design is that star and either a box to the right or two boxes to the left and right. And a lot of great names were taken, you know. So Paint Corps was about the only one that we could come up with that had that sort of military ring to it. And of course, it drives me crazy when say, oh, I saw your Paint Corps truck, right? And so now it's Paint Corps like Marine Corps. And like I said, imagine. It's really challenging to do two new brands. So naturally, we decided to do a third one in 2021. And we were getting a lot of calls for athletic fields. And our equipment, while it sort of can do it, it really isn't quite set up for that. And we were just turning away a lot of work. And we were also looking for, we were turning away a lot of veterans who couldn't quite afford to join our G-Force team because of the, you know, the, we require a certain amount of equipment, trailers, trucks, all that. So, you know, athletic fields, there's really not a, no, certainly no national brand there. And it's very mom and pop-ish. And so we decided, well, what's a really low cost of entry business we could put some folks into to sink their teeth into that entrepreneurial, you know, journey? And so we came up with Field Ops, athletic field markings. And I think we've got 6 locations now. A number of them are using the robots. So that's kind of cool. I actually want a robot for myself, but I haven't gotten around to it. But so those are our 4 brands. I think we had 75 earlier in the year, and our goal is to get to about 95, 20 more locations between the 4 brands. That's, I think that's very achievable. We have that slow, steady growth. We don't use franchise brokers. We might start in the future. That's one way to spur growth, but we've kind of done it internally.
That's so interesting. You say it's not that fast, or I can't remember the expression you just said, but slow, steady growth, you said. I mean, does it actually feel that way? Because I'm from the outside, when I started following what you guys are doing, you know, I got connected with a different franchise company and then I found yours. This was like 2019. It seems like it's quite fast.
We had, for a while we were doing about 10 a year at GeForce, which is, I love that pace. In the franchise world, I forget what the percentage is. There's a very high percentage that never get above 20. There are close to 4,000 active franchise brands, and there are thousands that never break through 5, 10, or certainly 20. So we're in that better space. But some of these folks will come in and with big money behind it and sort of different business models for the most part. They can put in 100, 200, 300 in a year. So, you know, playing in the franchise sandbox, we're a little bit on the small side. But in terms of what we're equipped to handle and where we want to be, you know, I'd always like to be a little farther ahead than we're at, but I'm pretty happy with where we're at. There's a pressure washing franchise that just launched about a year and a half ago. And I think he's got 100 locations.
In pressure washing.
Yeah. So they're using the franchise broker network. And there now you've got salesmen who are bringing people in who are looking to buy a franchise. They don't know what they want. And they start pitching these different ideas. And that one became very popular. And so I think he's at 100 locations in about a year and a half. That's a lot of crazy growth. As much as that would be fun and exciting, it's also terrifying to think about that many new people coming for
it. It sounds like a lot to me. Well, I'll tell you what, I didn't look this up before, so I might be wrong, but I suspect you're older than me. I didn't confirm it. I want to go way back. I want to go way before I even started GeForce. Like, give me the 3-minute version, Jack. Like, where were you born? Where do you come from? And obviously, there's a military background here with the GeForce brands. I mean, tell us about it.
So my old high school buddy, Barney Brannigan, when asked, and he would describe himself or guys like us, just a dumb white Irish kid from the south side of Chicago, right? And so south side Irish is a thing in Chicago. And so that was me. Went to private school, wore a uniform then. My dad owned a couple of airplanes when I was very young. He took me flying in his little Cessna. He also owned a Beech 18, which is a very cool twin-tail, two-engine airplane with polished, you know, aluminum skin. And so I had that early, you know, touch with flying. My dad fell on harder times. He had a partner that embezzled him, and he never really recovered from that. So private school went out the window, and then I started misbehaving in high school and getting away with a lot. But I've always worked. I got a job when I was like 14 and a half, and I've worked ever since. After high school, I just kind of kicked around. I planned to go be a Chicago cop. I kept saying, that's what I'm going to do, but you got to be older. In the meantime, I was going nowhere fast, and a buddy of mine had joined the Army, and we were friends, and he went to military police school, and he was telling me how much fun it was. I'm like, you know what, I might go do that. So I visit the recruiter, and next thing I know, I'm signing up for the Army, and off I go. And when I had hair, they shaved it off, and it was a lot of hair at the time, as a matter of fact. And so did military police work. I really had a ball with that. A lot of responsibility, 19 years old with a 45, a badge and a white hat and a Ford Maverick six cylinder with blue lights on it. What more could you ask? Then I went to military police investigator school, and I shipped out over to Germany, and I didn't have to wear a uniform anymore. I could grow my hair back a little bit, and I started working the drug team with the CID folks. So the drug team was myself, myself and the other guy. It was a very small post in Germany. I had a lot of fun there, but I quickly learned that police work wasn't for me. As much as I really kind of thrived in that environment, I liked the legal part of it. I liked actually the chain of custody, the legal, avenues, making the case, all that sort of stuff. I was becoming very cynical about people. And so I just, I saw that it was ruining some folks. And so I didn't want to be like that. So I was going to go to law school. So I come back and I start college, and I'm working part-time in Chicago as a this local kind of private police force. It's called Ford City. And we had a brutal winter. It was a famous snowstorm from 79, I think. And so I said, and my friend who had gotten out, the military policeman, he was now flying for Photomat. I don't know if you know what Photomat is. It's a place back in the day you would drop your film off and they would develop it. And they would take the canisters and the driver would pick them up at each Photomat, take them to the airport, and they'd pick up a bag with all the developed film. So your film went to Photomat into a station wagon to the airport on an airplane to the local processing facility, get processed. A couple days later, and make the return journey. And I was flying along with him, and I was having a blast, flying this twin-engine airplane around Chicago and reading the magazine. It's like, go to college in Daytona Beach, learn to fly, right? And we just, like I said, been through a brutal winter. I said, you know what? I'm going to go do that. So went down to Daytona Beach, Embry-Riddle, started taking pilot flying lessons. I got accepted into this kind of experimental program where the one of the professors was making the case to the FAA that they could train people and cut down the amount of flying time and make them better pilots if they put them in the simulator very early before they soloed. And these simulators were really, it almost like a circus ride. It was very strange. But anyway, I had some great instructors because they wanted us, the group, to succeed. So I was able to solo very quickly. And then they had permission from the FAA to waive the normal limits. So I was, funding my way through school. The GI Bill didn't pay a whole lot back then. I was working, 35 hours a week at Sears. So I took advantage of this program, and I was able to reduce my flying time dramatically to get the same license. I got my private license early. I got my commercial license early. I got my instrument license early. I joined ROTC during all that. I got accepted into pilot training. After college, I shipped out to Columbus for pilot training. Finished up there, I was assigned the C-141 four-engine cargo. Flew that for 7 years, or 6 years, actually, 7 years total in the Air Force. I became an instructor pilot. I used to teach people to aerial refuel, things like that. I taught the instructor pilot course. So then the day after I left the Air Force, I stepped out of an Air Force cockpit and into a Delta jet. I flew with them. After 9/11, the airlines went through some tough times. Delta and most of the other airlines filed bankruptcy. They terminated my pension. I took pay cuts, so I was bounced from one airplane to the next. I lost my license there for a bit with a medical, and things were collapsing. My world was really collapsing around me, and I had looked into driveway sealing some years before that. And something kept telling me like there was no brand, you know, most of the guys were, you know, there was no sort of, most of them didn't have a web presence. This is back circa 2004 or so. And so I decided to jump into that space. I had a friend who said, he had a bunch of commercial properties. Hey, if you get that, you know, equipment, I'll give you all my work. So I ran out and got it, right? And figured out how to, you know, do this stuff and hired some folks. And I told my friend, hey, I'm ready to go. And he said, all right, give me a quote. And I gave him the quote. And he goes, oh, you're a lot higher than some of the other guys. So I didn't get any of the work, right? So now what, right? So, you know, our logo was clever. Our branding was great. Our trucks, we used box trucks to hide the seal coat tank, to hide the ugly from, and we did a lot of residential. And we pretty much dominated the residential market very early. And
what was that brand called? What was it called?
That was Black Dog.
Black Dog.
Not many are left of that brand. And then later, when we started striping, we launched Yellow Dog Striping, and we spelled Dog DAWG. So Yellow Dog has survived and grown since I've left. Black Dog seemed to peter off. So I did that for a number of years. I had a partner, kind of self-destructed, and it just became kind of unmanageable. And so I sold out to a competitor. And I had a 5-year no compete. And at the time, you could have given me a 100-year no compete. Like it was a bad experience. You know, things didn't work out the way I had envisioned. I felt like we had the right brand. I, you know, focused on customer service. I mean, a lot of what I do here is exactly what I did there. But I think the difference I have now is, as the folks are really, who are the franchise partners, we're very much in alignment with what we're trying to do together. Whereas my experience before, I just kind of had folks going in different directions and kind of arguing over putting the crew in a simple logo t-shirt, you know, that stuff was just kind of maddening. So getting back to the whole, I grew up in a private school in a uniform, a little break there during public high school, and then college in ROTC in a uniform, Air Force, you know, 7 years, Delta Airlines in a uniform. I've spent most of my life in uniform. And that's one of the things that, you know, we do at G-Force is we have a very simple uniform, like our safety yellow shirt. And you do get teased once in a while. We'll put, like, we use a digital camo pants. And they're like, well, are you trying to be seen or not? And I get that, right? But it goes, those digital camo pants match our trucks and trailers. And they're not, you know, the heavy, dark, like hunter camo. The light digital camo pants, I think, hide paint spills really well. That's one of the other reasons.
Bonus.
So then I was looking at what to do after, as my no compete was up, but I really wasn't thinking of getting back into the business. But two lessons I learned from my experience. One was striping, I knew could be national. And seal coating isn't necessarily a national thing. There's a lot of places with a lot of concrete, and it's tough to just stand up a seal coat commercial rig, right? You need crew, and you don't have customers right away. It's just a harder thing to do. But striping is needed everywhere, concrete or asphalt. The other piece I learned from my experience is, you know, the few veterans that I work with, we just understood each other a little better. And most of the folks I flew with when I was at Delta, like 98% of the folks sitting next to me were military pilots. So I've been around the military, essentially, you know, for quite a few years. So, and I knew this striping was a thing that I felt was really something a lot of veterans would be interested in. Outdoors, you know, be your own boss, take some skills. But, you know, you can learn it on your own, but a lot of them had never owned a business. And there's a lot more to opening a business than going to the local, you know, state and filing your LLC and getting a business card, right? And so we think we do branding pretty well and marketing. Got a great tech team. So, you know, we offered this thing up and we decided to, you know, that if I wanted to work with veterans, why don't I just make it exclusive to them? And that's not to say veterans are better than non-veterans. I want to be very clear about that. But to go along with the brand, and I felt I had a higher probability of getting some folks on the team where we could communicate what our mission was internally and customer facing, that was the way to go. And we were the first brand to franchise exclusively to veterans. I put a $20 Facebook ad out there once I had the franchise documents built, and my first lead comes in, and it's Vishal Munasamy, this funny named guy, right? Like, all right, who's this guy? And I call him, and sure enough, he's an Army vet. He's been to Iraq, and he was my first lead, right? And he became our first franchisee, and I think that might be a Guinness Book of Franchise World Records, because that just stuff doesn't happen. And I thought, well, this is going to be easy, right? Well, it's harder than that. So, you know, we've been plugging along. That was 2018. We secured two, I think, that year, or three, I believe, in 2018. One of them was on Christmas Eve. And then I think we added another six the next year. And then it was kind of like 10 and 10. We actually did well after the initial shock of COVID. We did pretty well in 2020. Finished that year up with, I think, 10 on the books more. And then another 10. And then last year was a little slower. The folks we were marketing with kind of changed what they were doing. And we parted ways, and our lead flow fell for franchising. But we've got it back on track a little bit. And it's getting a little harder. Like I said, we only have certain spots where we're looking for folks: New York, New Jersey, Nevada, a couple parts in Florida, St. Louis, south side of Chicago. I've got a north side. I need someone in my old hometown. Anyway, I feel like I've been rambling. That's kind of... That's more than 3 minutes.
What's up, Pod Squad? This episode of the show is brought to you by our friends at Mighty Line Floor Tape. So, true story, our company started using Mighty Line. We found the product like half a year ago, 2023, we found it, and we started using it, and I was blown away. The product is incredible. And so many of us in the striping industry want to do interior striping, but we also know that interior striping on concrete usually does not work out very well. This is a fantastic solution. If you have customers that want safe walk lines or customized floor decals, check out their website on Mighty Line. It's incredible. They have an awesome portfolio of stuff. And if you've never tried the product before, head to the website, let them know that you got the info from the podcast, and they will actually send you a free sample box. Check it out, Mighty Line Floor Tape. We are so grateful for them to be sponsoring the podcast. Dude, it's not rambling at all. It's not rambling at all. It's an incredible story. Like it's fast to me. 75, probably going to be to 95 this year. I think that's incredible.
And it's all four brands. We hope to be at 50, but with G-Force.
Yeah. But you're responsible for all of them. That's still, yeah, it's spread across different brands, but it's still impressive. You know, there's one thing I probably from the moment I first reached out to you, I've been like, I would love to know in more detail. Like one of the struggles we have in our company, we do not franchise. So I have no intention of franchising. I like to stay home, Jack. I don't like to travel. So one of the challenges we've had though, is as the business owner gets off the tools a little bit, whether that's a striping machine, a seal coat rig, and he starts to let go and he has other people doing the work, you know, sometimes there can be a dip in quality. Now, I'm wondering in your world, what does that look like? Because you have brand new people, you have brand new business owners, like you said. It's being marketed to a very specific niche of veteran owners, but I'm guessing most of these guys have not come from a background, men and women have not come from a background of asphalt maintenance or striping. So what does that look like in the company? Like I guess the training program, because obviously from a brand perspective, you don't want to set these men and women up to fail saying, well, you paid the franchise fees, you figure it out. It's not that hard. There has to be some level of training. What does that look like?
So we have a fairly in-depth online course A lot of that is business systems, but also exposure to, you know, the basics of, you know, starting machine, maintaining machine, tip sizes, you know, pressures, seal coat types, what kind of paint you'll use on which seal coat. And that's a fairly long course. And then they go to Tampa for a week, and then on their graduation, and they'll work with Vish, who's our trainer now. And Vish and his crew are just really incredible. And so they're learning the proper way, not developing bad habits from day one. They, you know, they're not bringing any bad habits with them. And then on their graduation certificate, it actually says, you know, now you know enough to be dangerous. That's right. So we tell them, you know, these are the things to look out for and where you're not going to succeed. So when you get these sorts of jobs, and of course we ask them to work with us on every bit initially as it comes through. We start taking the training wheels off on the smaller bids, and then the bigger bids, you know, the training wheels start coming off once they start getting the hang of it. But, you know, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, as you know. You know, the restripe of the local dentist office, the go donate some work at the church to you know, they're not going to fuss if you missed your start by an inch or two. Get a little practice under their belt. And then if they're presented with like a new layout at a Walmart, we would never have a brand new graduate on a new layout with Walmart. So we'll drive or fly someone in and work with them on those projects. So luckily I've got lots of volunteers to help them work their way through those jobs that have to be perfect. And I don't want to give out the impression that it's okay to be an inch off of your start or stopped, but you can fix that. And they'll, you know, we use lasers, but, you know, maybe the laser out of alignment didn't realize it. There's a little mistake there. You know, there's that steep learning curve, and that learning curve is different for everyone, but it is absolutely very steep, as you know, early on. And then some just get right to it and they're going, and others it's a longer process to get to there. But we really make sure that they're not stepping into a place where they're going to fail, because it's not just their own failures, which would be difficult to handle, but it could affect our entire brand. So that's how we protect against that. Because the reality is, they should be with you for 6 months, right? And we don't have that time. They don't have that time. And we're leaning on their, you know, can-do, get the mission done attitude and that response, that sense of responsibility to make sure it's done right. Now, as I tell them, you know, when you go out to this job, and let's say it's a $1,000 job, it might take them 8-10 hours, right? And I said, your time doesn't mean anything right now. Do not measure what you're making per hour. Your time is free. You go out there. If you need to align that thing 12 times before you feel good, before you hit the trigger, then you do that. And the next time it's maybe 11 or 10 and 9, and your speed picks up over time. And so the same job that would do 8 hours, let's say, for even $1,000 jobs, and we've had some of those guys, it's like everything went wrong. They, you know, they kind of forgot what they learned in training. The instructor's not there to, you know, give them the go ahead. It just takes longer, but then their confidence builds. And, you know, a year later, they're doing $1,000 job in an hour and a half. And they're like, I can't believe it took me 10 hours. You know, that's just the way that goes. So,
yep, totally get it. Yeah. And obviously there's a financial buy-in here. I mean, these are business owners. They've bought in and they've literally invested themselves. So I get it. I really want to ask you about something you said earlier, though. I'm not going to keep you too much longer here, but something you mentioned earlier, you made it, you know, very clear, like veterans, it's not that veterans are better, but there's a mutual understanding is what it sounds like you were saying. Like, you know, there's a language that's spoken, but you also mentioned something about, the mission of what we're trying to do, not like on a project basis, but in the greater context of the company. So I want to ask you about that. I'm very much a purpose and mission driven person.
You know, I had it pretty easy in the military. I worked really hard. I felt they got their nickel's worth out of me, both in the Army and as a pilot. I lived out of a suitcase. We called it the B4 bag. When I flew cargo around the world as an aircraft, new co-pilot, aircraft commander. After I left, like I said, I'm at Delta, and virtually everybody around me is a veteran, right? And we didn't thank each other for our service, right? It was not a thing. And I didn't, with my old company, you couldn't find veteran owned on my old company. It just wasn't a thing I considered. And I've never felt the need to be thanked for my service, right? It was a privilege for me to do that. I didn't realize it at the time, what a privilege it was, but looking back, a little more maturity, and you look back and, that was a really amazing privilege. I knew, like you said, the dumb white Irish kid from Chicago, I was hoping no one was going to find out that, they let me fly this multi-billion-dollar airplane, right? So after 9/11, I was noticing that the guys coming back after 2003, going to combat, they were having a hard time finding work. Their unemployment rate was much higher than the standard unemployment rate. And it was really frustrating for me to watch that. And I felt like the striping business was a fix. Oh, my doggie's here making a little noise. I felt like striping was a really good avenue for them to pursue. We tried to recruit veterans. I only was able to recruit a couple. We even went so far as to doing a franchise giveaway under my old brand. We gave away the trailer, the franchise fee. We wrapped the trailer. Sherwin-Williams donated first 10 buckets of paint. Graco donated $3,900 for us. We ran a Facebook contest, and we had all of like three or four entrants, right? Nobody heard about this thing. We didn't have the big PR budget to, get all these people. And I was really excited about that. And then when we had to pick one, and then I had to pick up the phone and tell three others that they didn't win, that was like, I hadn't thought about that piece. Like, that was really kind of soul crushing for me. And, but we found a winner. It was a Purple Heart Army guy. And so I was feeling compelled to give back to these folks, because now people might find out I'm a veteran and are thanking me for my service and offering veteran discounts. None of that happened before 9/11. It just wasn't a thing. So I felt like I'm getting thanked for someone else's service. And so when I developed the concept for G-Force, I felt I wanted to build it around primarily the post 9/11 folks, but it's open to all veterans, of course. And I feel like I'm pretty good at branding, pretty good at marketing. I think actually my instructor pilot experience makes me a pretty well qualified franchisor, because you need to remember what it's like to be that new, whether it's new co-pilot or the new aircraft commander who's never plugged into an airplane at flight to get gas, or a new business owner. You don't know what you're doing, and you need to be able to relate to what that's like, and then give them these building blocks and baby steps to set them up for success. And so that's what I think the franchise model is all about, is setting people up for success. It's up to them to succeed, right? We've got folks in killer markets that are doing okay, and we've got other folks that in markets that I was a little nervous about, they're our top performers, right? So it's very much, if it's a service-based business, it's very much based on who's answering that phone and how aggressively they go after it and how badly they want it, frankly. So I don't know if I answered your question.
No, I know. You totally did. You totally did. You just seem like you have such a solid handle on it all in just 5-6 years. Is there anything you've learned along the way, though? 75 locations, no joke. Is there anything you've learned along the way? I guess what surprised you the most, I guess, is my question. What's the thing that go, wow, I didn't know about this?
I learned that some people won't pay you. I'm talking about our franchisees,
Oh, okay. Interesting.
not getting paid from contractors.
Interesting.
But, you know, they love veterans, and, you know, you look at their post, and then there's the flag and Happy Veterans Day, and then they can't find them when they, you know, it's time to get paid.
Hmm.
A little hard.
What's your go-to strategy? Because that's like a million-dollar question for so many people, Jack. How do you? What's the strategy for you?
Oh, to get them paid?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you play the lean game. You know, you can hire lawyers. You know, we've had our guys. You know, and it's their business, right? And so they have to decide what they do. It gets very expensive to hire lawyers. That one's hard to watch because, you know, we got stiffed by one very significant customer, and it was really difficult on our folks. They bounced back okay, but you know, you're in your first year of business, and they've been giving you a lot of work, they've been paying you, and then all of a sudden you do some more work, and then the payments stop. You know, that seems to be a thing where you get caught up. They make payments early on, and then so you keep working with them, and then they stop paying. And we've had that happen several times. One of our guys did go to court. You know, they settled. You know, on, you know, 75 cents on the dollar, which is probably more than you might expect. The others are, you know, still pondering what, you know, what to do with their next legal move. So that's hard. And then to watch that company post, you know, Veterans Day messages, it's annoying to say the least.
That's a friendly word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If this wasn't a family channel, I might have a few other choice words. So that one's still, that bothers me. You know, I'm kind of shocked by that behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, well, your brand is predicated on the very franchisees and the veterans themselves. And I totally get it, especially if a company's broadcasting their commitment.
No contractor should be.
No.
But I think because of the, that... They tend to, I call it borrowed valor. They tend to borrow the veteran valor on Memorial Day and 4th of July and Veterans Day, right? They're not a veteran-owned company, but we support our troops, right? And they're posting that while deliberately not paying our guys, you know. And I don't mean to go negative here. There's so much. So much positive going on, but you kind of,
yeah.
It was a recent discussion about this particular issue that was fresh on my mind. So I apologize for kind of going down.
No, you're good. You're good. Well, tell you what, turn it around and tell me what's a positive thing. Tell me a positive thing you've learned 6 years ago you didn't know.
There's a way more work out there than I actually ever imagined. So oh, yeah.
Even when you were with Black Dog and Yellow Dog, like, is this something?
Yeah, this has gotten, there's a lot. Yeah, we've been exposed to a lot more work. We were never able to get any sort of national traction. That was my goal. We never quite got there under my watch.
Too busy arguing about t-shirts, right?
Right, yeah. We were busy arguing about whether the guy should wear his cowboy hat instead of the company hat. And so once, we, you know, I always kind of felt once we had critical mass of 20 locations that we'd start getting a little more traction. And that seemed to work out pretty well. You know, I couldn't believe when I hit 20, like I was pinching myself. And so now to be able to go coast to coast, we're in Hawaii. We still need someone in Portland, Oregon, Portland, Maine, but I do have Seattle. We're opening up California as we speak. And by the way, if anyone's looking for work, we're looking for a crew lead in Southern California. That's our latest location that's opening up. Please reach out to me. We're desperate. Need for crew and a crew lead in California. You'll have the coolest truck to drive. We've got a 3,000 square foot warehouse and an office and really a great team leader out there in place already. So maybe we can shake the bushes on some crew. But picking up on those, national accounts, and they present challenges themselves. Got to perform at a very high level, and I think we're really well suited for that. And we're sending a lot of work from location to location. That's not even involving our national account salesperson. It's just they're working on a job, and one thing is mentioned, oh, by the way, I've got another property in North Carolina. Do you have anybody? Yeah, as a matter of fact, we do. So that sharing of work is really starting to accelerate. And now that cross-pollination pollination that I call it, between our brands, we're getting work sub from not sub but referred from G-Force to Paint Corps, and from Paint Corps to G-Force, and from Paint Corps to Mach 1, and vice versa. And that's really been super exciting to see that starting to happen. And as those brands hit about 20, 30, 40 locations, I think it's going to have an exponential and cumulative effect for our guys. And so that's pretty exciting.
Very cool. Well, you kind of just touched on it because my last question for you was put on your future hat, Jack, 5 years from now. What does it look like?
So, we're using EOS now, and we did our 1 year, 3 year, 10 year plan. We think we'll have 125 locations for Mach 1, 125 for Paint Corps, 60 for G-Force. I think G-Force is going to kind of max out. We, like I said, we award really large territories, where in San Antonio, our competitor might put two brands, or yeah, two franchises. We'll put one in Atlanta, where there might be two or three. We just have one, so they have really large territories. So we're kind of running out of that space, and it's by design. It's the way I wanted it. I wanted to have ample room to grow. And so, I forget what the numbers are. Well, we think there's a certain percentage of that is going to be just work that's shared among the brands. And we have a joint franchise annual conference. So we bring all the brands together, give them an opportunity to meet each other, learn about, what's working. And one brand can often work as well for our other brands. All of our logos are sort of jointly branded. Trucks are slightly different, but if you put them together, you realize there's a connection between these two brands. So it's we're the first brand that's really done that in the service space. And in the franchise world, there are a lot of umbrella groups, but they have very disparate brands. It's not the same sort of co-branding that's going on. So we're charting new territories. I was, I joke, I'm a visionary. I just sometimes don't know what to do with that vision. But when I started Yellow Dog Striping, I was the first brand in the striping space, franchise space. And, now I think there's five, essentially, striping brands out there. So I was a little early. I peaked early. And same thing with our umbrella group, using the power of that network to generate more work internally from the existing customers from each brand. We're able to email market. And by the way, you'd sign up for painting, but we could also mention that we do parking lot striping, field markings, and epoxy floors in those same emails. So and we also plan three more brands in that 10-year period.
Any, are you gonna like lift the lid a little bit on, just tell us one of them. Just give me one.
Well, we only have one picked out, but I got to keep that under wraps.
Oh, okay. Whenever it's G-Force North, the Canada edition, I'll just sit here wondering. That's fine.
No, it's going to be a service-based business.
Cool.
And that's where I love to play in that sandbox. I love to compete. I love to win. It is a service. It's not a commodity. And so that's our goal.
Jack, I am rooting for you. Man, I'm just grateful you gave us the time and grateful if you came on, and like just for how rapid the growth has been. you know, like I said, I've met you twice briefly in person, and plus I kind of know you from other places, but just to see someone so level, for lack of a better term, just like doing it for the right reasons, man, it's just incredible. Props to you.
I will also state that, you know, we wouldn't be here without the quality of the folks who've come and joined our team, right?
Yeah.
You can build, you can design something, but if you don't have people who believe in that, it simply doesn't work. So I'm humbled by the amount of work some of our guys are doing. And, you know, one of our locations is in the process of building his own 40 by 80 foot office and warehouse space, right? And he's the one that I tried to talk out of joining because I didn't think he would make it. So he's top performer building this warehouse. It's the first, I mean, we have a lot of warehouses, but they're all leased around the country. This is the first building that's being built simply for his GeForce location. And I have to say that's a moment of a lot of pride for me to see that he's able to do this for himself, and excited to see what's next for him. And he's only done that in about 4 or 5 years. It's been remarkable growth. So it's the people. Our website is built around our owners. It's not built around me. And I'm one of the reasons you've been chasing me is because I'm not comfortable doing this. GeForce is not about me. As I joke, I have a face for radio. I once had my, identity stolen. And then when they saw my picture, they gave it back. So it's all about our people. So
that's awesome, man. Yeah. Well, if anyone would like to know more, go GeForce.com, right? That's where it's at. And if you're in Southern California,
please.
I mean, not going to lie, by the time we get to February, where I am, I might just come down if it's still open, bro. Yeah, I might just do it. Man, thank you for the time today. All the best. I know we're going to keep in touch, and thank you for everything you're doing.
No, thank you. And, you know, you and I touched base via the internet a long time ago, and you were kind of cheering me on. I think I might have had 5 or 10 at the time. So thank you.
I believe in you, man. All right. All the best.
And congrats to you for all you've done. I mean, to be honest, you entertain me a lot on my little mobile device, see what Cam's up to. So
we're trying. I appreciate you, Jack. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Take care.